I'll say, can you think of an example of how you've manipulated food when you've been anxious? Or have you felt shame after the way you've manipulated something with food? Everyone will say, of course.
When it comes to relationships, we often forget the longest one we'll ever have is with ourselves. And just like traditional relationships, the best way to the heart is through the stomach. We need food as fuel, and investing in our own relationship with food is more important than ever. Joining me again is registered dietitian and behavioral health specialist Rachel Harvest. In our last conversation, we explored the psychology behind restrictive eating. Today, we're shifting the focus on what it really means to build a healthy, lasting relationship with food, one rooted in balance, sustainability, and a proactive mindset. Welcome to Ginger's Plate. Here, I share tips, recipes, and my favorite products of the moment. It's all about adding in rather than cutting out. Instead of removing something completely, what can you add to create balance? A common example is dessert. Many people feel guilty about it and cut it out entirely, almost as a form of punishment. That can lead to feelings of shame, guilt, and restriction that ultimately can lead to cravings and sometimes overeating the very foods that you made forbidden in the first place. But this is the perfect opportunity to add in and seek balance, not take away. One of my favorite recipes on my blog is for beet bars. Beets are packed with key nutrients that support gut health, metabolism, brain function, and heart health. They're rich in fiber, folate, and manganese, which help protect against chronic inflammation and disease. Plus, they're easy to find. Even canned beets work great. If you'd like to give this recipe a try, visit gingerholtonnutrition.com. Head to the blog section and check out the desserts category. Happy baking. Rachel, one thing that I have been seeing pop up more and more is disorders like ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or binge eating disorder. Do you consider those still restrictive, or how do you classify?
They're often coinciding. I always say that the minute, you know, when a person has a binge, and then shame that follows that has them decide that they're not going to eat breakfast or restrict in some way, they've just started the next binge. And it's usually based in fear of, for some reason, or rules that are made up and don't really make sense. So, and they're usually emotionally related. I avoid and restrict because I don't know what I need, so I'd rather not need anything, or I want to fix something. Binge eating disorder, there's a chemical component to it. There's a dissociative component. There are behavioral cues that go along with it. Whenever someone reports a binge to me, I will ask what happened all day. Like, what was your emotional state? How much attention are you giving to your body? Where are you in your menstrual cycle? What is going on hormonally? Part of that biochemical component of binge eating is to get the rush of dopamine and serotonin that occurs. So if we have low progesterone, estrogen, that could be more something you want to do biochemically, like in your unconscious in a more addictive way. There's two skills that come to mind right now, one of which is mindfulness. Like, let's have that moment with ourselves. And then the second being urge surfing. When you haven't done that all day, how do you surf the urge? Like, when someone's on a surfboard and they get on a really large wave that's probably not manageable and is scary for them, the worst thing they can do is jump off the surfboard. So it's like, how do we actually stay in the present moment to the urge but not indulge it is a very high level skill. Much easier to attain when you've been mindful all day. Versions of restriction, one's emotional, like I'm not in touch with myself and I'm restricting my access to myself. And then the other one being also emotional, but we have a physical restriction as well. When it comes to food, I'll say, can you think of an example of how you've manipulated food when you've been anxious, when you've felt shame? Or have you felt shame after the way you've manipulated something with food? Everyone will say, of course. We learn so much about being human through food. We learn autonomy. We learn what we like and dislike. So having a good relationship with food, like I was a ballerina, did all the technique and stuff. And then when I was in my early 30s, I started doing aerial dance. And it's actually not as hard as ballet. The technique is very much less, but you have to just be strong. And I found, like, in doing that, I was like, it's so much better experience in my body because it was easier. And I was like, I love how much I know my body. Like, this is the coolest transition for me. Because now I'm like, what else can it do? And that's a very specific example, but it might be, oh, if I feel my body before I go and work out, I'm able to lift more weight, or I'm able to sustain myself in this exercise class a little more.
I love the messaging of like doing the best you can and having the most fun you can with what you've got. And you also talking about clothing a couple weeks ago, I had two people on two different days. One said, oh, I can't wait to lose weight so I can buy new clothes. Like, I'm so excited to invest in that. It's going to feel amazing. And the next day I had somebody say, oh, I gained weight. I hate that I have to buy more clothes. Like, I don't want to change my wardrobe. And I was just like, wow, isn't that interesting? The juxtaposition and just the reframing of I get to buy new clothes or I don't want to buy new clothes. Do you get that messaging a lot?
If you're not duped into what you should look like or what the style of the now is, you actually have self-expression. But then there's also the piece of like how I present myself. If you watch any kind of stylist or designer, they'll show you like what different kinds of fits look like on different kinds of bodies and what type of tailoring actually suits these features versus these features. And it's a way for you to express yourself that has literally nothing to do with whether or not you weigh 180 pounds or 110. So I actually tell people, dress for where you're at. Or what do they say? Dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Like, step into it. Step into where you're going. Does that mean you buy like a size zero baby tee? No, you don't, because it's not where you're going. But also, what else is in it? There's judgment in it. There's assessment. If I go into a changing room and I'm looking very close to the mirror, what am I looking at? Am I looking at how I'm expressing myself and the way I feel? Or am I looking for what's wrong with me? But that's not going to help you whether you're thin or you're not.
This episode is brought to you by Orgain. You push your body to perform, whether it's at the gym, at work, or out doing what you love on the weekends. So why not fuel it with the best? Orgain's 30-gram plant protein powder delivers high-quality nutrition to support your personal best. With just 1 gram of sugar per serving, plus an organic fruit and vegetable blend, it's a convenient way to support your body. Plus, it's USDA certified organic, non-GMO, soy-free, and gluten-free, so you can trust that you're getting the best fuel possible. I think people struggle greatly just with the decoration that goes on the vehicle that we have, our body. I think your comment on outside influences, how do you handle that with your clients getting all this messaging?
Everybody's got an opinion that they're sharing. Is it resonating truly and in deeply with you? Is the first question to ask. Like, you, who you are. Like, who, not who you think you should be or want to be. Like, it, who you are. You feel like, that's me. That's true. That's something that I connect with. It's not a normal thing because we're so influenced to kind of go in this lane or choose this lane or be on this team or... So if you just ask that question to begin with, then you know, everybody's on the socials. I detox that. Like, take it off your phone. And if anything in your feed doesn't make you feel good, mute it or unfollow. It's yours to choose. Like, it's your social media. But if you're actively choosing it, like, I want this to inspire me. I have certain people that I want to know what's going on in their life, but also I get to pick up the phone and ask them because they're actually my real friends. Like, things like that, and understanding like comparison is always going to be a source of failure. So comparison like atrophies the part of our self-esteem that we need, like that is of the self.
So if somebody has been following rigid food rules for years, and a lot of folks are in that category, what would you suggest is the first step in rebuilding trust with their body at that point? Where do you start?
I remember once I had a patient and she was laughing. It was actually very healing for her. She was anorexic and she had a rule that she could only have a marshmallow if she ran an extra mile and she stood in the kitchen while she ate it. And I was like, read it again. And she read it again. She's like laughing. And I was like, the humor is a good thing because think about what you're saying. think about how much sense that actually makes. And then you start to see that your rules are shallow. They don't have a real reason behind them besides some sort of control. So when you admit it and you look at it and you actually apply logic to it, because most of those rules are based on emotion, which lacks logic if we're not even and balanced. It's like you get light about it because there's no depth to it. It's floating on top. It's easy to release. The reason for it that's deeper is harder. But the more you start to like admit almost like, I'm telling on myself because I did the thing. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not bad. You're not punished. Is it working for you? No. What would work? Okay. Let's try that.
I just appreciate your kindness towards self and like gentleness to help reduce the shame that often comes along with restriction, especially long term.
To do that work, if you really feel like you're stuck in something or you're really just like disconnected from yourself and your happiness or your experience of being good in life, like just do it. Like just go in there and do it. It's messy. It takes some time. It takes effort to figure out what your needs are, whatever it is, emotional, physical, whatever. Do it though. So it's like nobody's brave if they're not afraid.
I love that message. It is worth it and it is scary and you do have to be brave. I'm so glad I got to talk to you about all this today. I really enjoyed my conversations with Rachel. We covered so many topics I see in my practice and explored practical steps to rebuild a healthy relationship with food. Sometimes it's as simple as writing down your thoughts about food to see how they translate outside your head, or challenging yourself to ask, am I truly in touch with my emotions? Can I recognize how they shape not just my mindset, but also the way I nourish my body? Taking a step back to reflect can be a powerful first move towards lasting change. Whether you're navigating your own relationship with food or supporting someone else, it's important to remember that food is deeply connected to every aspect of our lives. Like anything else, it doesn't exist in isolation, but is shaped by our emotions, experiences, and environment. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to rate, leave a review, and follow the Good Clean Nutrition podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.